Good morning. Welcome to the Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. This is another episode. I'm Nash Gabriel from the Gabriel Cancer Center, and my co-host is Shelley Wrench. She is the administrator. And we talk about things based on my first book, which is Good Medicine, Cheaper Medicine. And we try to educate the public and employers in the area on how to make things better for them, for the local economy, and of course, for their patients. Generally, Shelley, you and I decide on a topic when we are driving down here, right? Because we don't want any scripting. We just want to make a surprise,
right,
to ourselves.
A lot of times we end up in a totally different place than what we think about the topic.
Correct. I do drift often, and I wish I have a thought compass to direct me. Anyway,
you have no compass.
Today, I have no compass. Just when I swim, I go 95 degrees. Today, you decided that you...
I want to hitch up with a surprise question.
Surprise question. Okay.
It's pretty broad. I think it's intriguing, and I know I want to hear the answer, and I think the listeners would too. If you had $24 billion, what would you do with it?
If I have $24 billion, I can tell you what I will not do. I will still keep working, doing the same job. I don't think I will cut my hours. That's one. Second, I'll still continue to play golf as much as possible. But there are things I want to do. I want to build a golf course. I would build a resort that is one of the most fabulous things, right? And I would be like driving a car and I see a homeless guy standing there and I see that he has a leg cut or chopped, like especially military, I would just send somebody, take him from there and have him in a resort and have him stay there and play golf. I will specially treat the military and their families super special. Probably I will not charge them because $24 billion, right?
Right.
I think I can afford to give away some money.
Yeah. So where would the golf course be?
Ohio is beautiful. Probably an area where, around Leesville Lake, the watershed area, and you can design a beautiful golf course, especially
the hills.
Oh, my
goodness, I would have to have a lot of water balls.
Yeah, you have a lot of water balls there. And look at Longaberger, it's a very nice course. Right. But if you move more east, I think that area is beautiful. I like courses where there is elevation up and down, not the regular links.
Right.
So that would be something I would do. Make it a resort like Nemacolin where families can go and have fun. And you know what? If it doesn't work, hey, you gave me $24 billion and I wasted five of them, right? Not a big deal. That would be one. But you know what I would do with $24 billion? There is something in healthcare that I think you were missing, and I want to do that with that money. And that is, until today, when we take care of patients, we get incentivized to do more because we get paid more. Do you agree?
Right. Fee for service.
Yes. So the old-fashioned capitation system that people did where... Remember capitation in the 90s, they come to the family doc and they give him, let's say, 1,000 patients, will give you $10 a month, regardless whether you see them or not.
Right.
And he will see them. Almost similar to other on-site clinic we have, right?
Yeah, it's similar to that, but I didn't think about it. It's the same thing as, now it's concierge medicine. They just, instead of capitation, they're calling it concierge.
Although,
very, very close, very similar.
Very, very close. What happened with the capitation system was that the docs, because they don't get paid for seeing the patients, the family docs, they don't get paid when they admit the patients. So when the patient calls sick, go to the emergency room. Patient get headache, so the neurologist. So they start shifting all the care to the specialists and to the hospitals.
Yeah, it totally didn't work.
It didn't work. So what I will do with the $24 billion is something different. I will use Donald Rumsfeld's philosophy in the military. For those who don't know Donald Rumsfeld, the guy had been Secretary of Defense twice. I think once was under Reagan and once was under George W. Bush. His philosophy about reforming the military was maybe shrinking the number of the soldiers, but make the force more agile, more movable, like the Delta Force, and better equipped and better technology. I would use the same philosophy. I will build a hospital that is super efficient. I build a hospital super efficient, very highly selected staff, nurses, doctors, and so on. And I will hire physicians, specialists, and everybody, all as one group. And I will go to employers and tell them, you know what? I will take care of your employees A to Z this much per year. And I will beat every single price. So you give me this much per capita, per employee, and that's it.
There's no insurance involved.
That's the insurance. So I will be the insurance. I will be the hospital. I will own the physicians. I will have the lab. I take a risk the same way they take a risk by paying me.
That's an awesome idea.
Well, I hope nobody is stealing it, because soon I'll get my $24 billion, right? And somebody steal the idea. That is what's missing. And one of the reasons for that is, I think Obama, when he came up with Obamacare, he made one statement. He said, we need centralized healthcare system. People misunderstood. They thought when he said centralized that he meant government. No. Obama's vision and his team was each region to have one mega provider that they provide all services. And then they go and negotiate prices. The problem with that system is it's kind of monopoly. Because if you have one system, so to him, the Cleveland Clinic system was the most awesome thing. Well, I don't know how that is when their cost is God knows how many folds higher than the other folks. And this one, your $24 billion. Is there a lottery that makes you win $24
billion? I don't know.
How did I get
that
money?
I don't play the lotto.
Plus, I don't have many rich family members that they might die and inherit their money. Anyway, maybe just print some money, right? With this $24 billion, and build the system to make sure that the regulators also, to make sure that there is competition in the area. I mean, there will be competition. Because, example, I will go to the employers and say, here's my hospital, and here's my charge, and here's my staff, the whole comprehensive system. They can still go to Altman and Mercy or to any insurance and buy the insurance or be self-funded, and that will be the competition to the system. And we will see after 2-3 years whether what we do will make sense, both in terms of access. Remember, if we do that, Shelley, our physicians and nurses will have no incentive to delay seeing patients, because if you don't see them on time, they get more sick.
They costing the employer a lot more money. That's the whole reason we have our on-site clinic, is the access.
Right. So currently, when patients are not seen and they get more sick, who's penalized?
The employer.
The employer and the patient. Yep. In my system, the $24 billion that I will have, in that system, if we delay seeing the patients, who will be taking the risk losing money? It will be me. Because the employer said, here it is. You take care of it, man.
Exactly right. I mean, that even happens today with our on-site clinic clients. You know, the employees, you know, they're not forced to go to, they don't have to use the clinic, but because it's supported, you know, it's paid for by the employer, if anything goes wrong or they don't get seen exactly the way they want, then they have more room to complain. So we'd have to make sure that, you know, we would definitely have to take care of the people better than the local.
So, Shelley, you're saying that the on-site clinics is the first step towards the $24 billion thing?
I think so.
Could you explain to the public again how does it work with the on-site clinics?
The on-site clinics is a contract between our company, meaning EHCS, Employer Healthcare Savings, and the employer.
It is a primary care thing.
It's a primary care, and we have staff members, the healthcare providers, and pharmacy tech and MAs.
Yeah.
And so when a patient gets sick, and when they wake up in the morning, they don't feel right and they have to go to work, instead of staying home trying to get into their physician and hoping to get in that day, or staying home and saying, I'm going to try to get over this myself because I don't want to pay a $25 copay, they end up getting sicker, they don't show up for work, so the production goes down on the employer side, and then they end up in the ER, which to me, like I've said before, the emergency room is a registration desk for the hospital. It's just basically a check-in.
The emergency room is a registration desk for the hospital. I think we should add that quote to the book of quotes.
It's check-in. I mean, so they're going to end up in the hospital at least 24 hours. You know that. They're going to find pneumonia or some other kind of bogus. If they have a cough, they definitely have pneumonia, right? So they're going to find some reason to keep them at least 24 hours. And so that's a cost to the employer. Now they're out for 2 days, 2 days loss in production, and it just doesn't work. So everybody loses. So with the on-site clinics, when they wake up in the morning, they're not feeling well. They just call the on-site clinic and say, hey, I need to get in. They come to work, or if they're really sick, they just come into the clinic. But a lot of times, if it's not too bad, they'll come into work, and then they just tell their supervisor, I'm going to go to the clinic. I'll be gone for 15 to 20 minutes.
And the clinic is sitting
inside the plant.
Inside the plant, close to the assembly line.
Yeah, so it takes less than a minute or two to get to the clinic. The way that we schedule, there's never any waiting. So as soon as they get to the clinic.
Yeah, I don't believe we have waiting
chairs. We have three chairs in case they're coming in to pick up a prescription or waiting on a lab or something like that.
Otherwise, they stand or we better take care of them.
Yeah, exactly. So they get in and they're seen by the healthcare provider. If they need medication, we have an in-house dispensing lab or pharmacy so they can get their medications.
So this is
all for free.
Charlie, I need to explain to the public. The in-house dispensing. This is something that we kind of expanded on in our on-site primary care clinics, where we believe that if drugs are expensive to patients, chances are
they're not going to be adherent.
They'll not be adherent. If they're not adherent, they get more sick.
Right.
And they get more sick, go to the emergency room.
So then they spent the money on the drug and they're sicker. So
we went to the employer and said, hey, listen. We have a way that we can actually provide you drugs at a lower cost. So let's say a patient gets prescription for Augmentin. Let's say the prescription is $15. The employer, through the insurance plan, the self-funded plan, will pay $78, and the patient will pay the other, right? The rest?
Right.
So you went to the employer and tell them, listen, there's really a simple thing. We can eliminate the middleman. We get that Augmentin at cost from the manufacturer, and the cost will be $3. What did the employer say? I would pay for all of it.
Sign me up.
And forget. And they said, don't even charge the patient anything. So the patients come to the clinics. They get seen instantly.
No money exchanged.
No money exchanged. Most of the drugs, most of the ailments they have, there's generics. If there isn't, then there's a different story. But the generic drugs available in the clinic, they get it right away. Within 20 minutes, back on the assembly line.
And most employers pay for that time.
And the patients actually pay zero.
Right.
Is there a limit to how many times they can be seen per week?
No.
They can be seen as often as possible?
Unlimited, yep.
And in fact, we even call them to remind them of their appointments. Because we know this better succeed and work well.
And the other thing, too, is we identify them through their annual wellness. You know, a lot of the annual wellness programs, how they work is you get a hospital to come in with a bunch of phlebotomists, draw the blood, take the blood back to the hospital. It gets tested. The results are sent to the patient, the employee, and then what happens?
You know what, Shelley, about the wellness program, I'm glad you brought up this point. The wellness program, you know how we are in this society? If somebody says something is nice, something is good, everybody says good. If somebody says that Trump is a horrible person, everybody says he's a horrible person without actually thinking for ourselves. So for a while, wellness, until we went to the city of Dover. We, remember?
Yeah.
We talked to the mayor, who was an acquaintance, almost like a friend, and we said, listen, this is a good one, and he loved it. So we went there to do presentation. It happened on the day when they had their wellness program.
I remember.
What was the wellness program?
It was basically just a simple blood shot, or blood test and flu shot.
And a video.
Oh, that's right, that they were supposed to sit and watch, and they all had their eyes closed.
Some of them were drinking their beer. No,
yeah,
they were not.
Crazy.
That was for the city. And then I realized, what a farce. Then what we discovered was, actually, wellness program, they draw the blood, and nobody looks at the result.
Well, they send it, hopefully, send it to the patient. But what does the patient know what to do with it?
Poor patient,
We're in our on-site clinic.
So the patient gets the blood work, and they tell them, you better take care of it. And the poor patient says, what on earth is this? What do I do with these numbers? What's LDL? What's HDL? What's MCV? Poor patients. So we incorporate, to be honest with you, Shelley, you don't have to incorporate the wellness, because what we do at the clinics, we do the number one, as you said, the annual health assessment. So we check their height and weight and BMI and what else?
Waist measurement, and then their CVC, CMP, lipid.
Blood pressure, lipid. And somebody looks at those instantly. And when there is a flag, see next day.
Right.
When everything is kosher, we'll see you in 3 months. Or if they get sick in between, we see them.
Right. It's an amazing thing. And if we can adopt that in your $24 billion hospital idea.
Oh, are you kidding? That would be part of it.
That would just
so when the employers, absolutely, it will be perfect. When the employers say, we will give you this much to take care of all our patients, I will not depend on the patients to come to be seen at the office where we have physicians. I will have clinics there the way we have because the program we have is working like charm.
Right.
And the employers are very happy. We have how many now? 11, 12?
13.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, that will be incorporated. But I didn't mention it in my wish list because we already have it. We just incorporated in the program.
But the poor insurance companies, they would lose out. There's no TPA. There's no consultant.
That gives me heartburn. So if the insurance companies become upset, I will be upset too. So I'll tell them, get over it. Take Nexium or Prilosec. Actually, Prilosec is cheaper. As effective, I take it when I take my Bloody Mary or something. Prilosec is very good for your heartburn. Yeah, and it is time, Shelley. It is time that we always come with the new ideas. I mean, this is the beauty of America. There are always new ideas. There are always new innovations. This is time. I think we have to think really outside the box, because we have the system now that we meaning the providers, with the physicians, hospitals. We are incentivized to be inefficient. Just give you an example. I've talked about this in my book, in the first book. A patient comes to me with a headache. It might take me 5 minutes talking to the patient to figure out what's wrong with the patient. Another physician, it might take him or her 6 visits, an MRI, and a CAT scan, and sleep studies and all that to figure it out. Who makes more money?
Oh, definitely the second guy.
The incompetent one. Yep. This is exactly how the system is. You go to a hospital and you get appendectomy. If you have a lousy surgeon or you have a complication, actually the system pays for your incompetence. Just think about that. What kind of screwed up system do we have?
It's called fee for service. What kind of service is that?
It's fee for service. And there is... It's not only there is no incentive for productivity, there is disincentive to be efficient. Give you an example, right? A patient, this is a really good example. A patient comes to the office, like one of our patients, lung cancer, whatever. The family calls, hey, he's very short of breath today. What do you do normally? Come over right away, right?
Yeah.
Come, I listen.
We don't even put them on hold. It's coming right
I examine
coming
them, maybe a CAT scan, maybe ultrasound we have in the office. I find they have massive pleural effusion, huffing and puffing, oxygen is low. Normally, those physicians who don't do what I do, what do they do? Go to the emergency room. You sit there for 6 hours. Finally, they get a CAT scan. And finally, they call me. What I do at GCC, I examine them. There's a fluid there, stick a needle, drain the fluid. How often do I do that?
Oh, anytime that has to be done.
It's almost like 2-3 times a week. Yeah. Drain the fluid. How you feel, buddy? Good. You want to go home? Yes. I get paid. If you compare how much we get paid for that service compared to, he goes to the emergency room, do all the testing and wait, and then get admitted automatically because we need to fill those beds, and all of a sudden, $78,000. I think for the procedure that I do, I get paid $120 maybe?
Yeah, it's around there.
Yet, for the same... Not the same service, for God's sake, no. When they go to the emergency room and get admitted, all that, you're talking about $78,000.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Aren't there algorithms for patients who come in for different diseases into the emergency room? It's like if it's a headache, it's an automatic like CT or MRI.
Yes. So if you have chest pain, you have to have urinalysis.
That makes sense.
Seriously. If you come with a headache, you have to have EKG. And this is another thing that it's really I think we had once a program about the CPT codes, and they were hilarious the baseball hat.
It was only a few days ago. We actually had to use one of those. It was somebody who got stung by a non-venomous spider, and it was initial.
Unintentional.
Meaning
the patient did not invite the spider to bite them.
No, it was unintentional. It was initial, so it could happen twice.
Oh, it was the first time around.
Or it could happen sequela, so it could, anyhow. But,
I think the people need to know that we have little problems in the system. So, I gave you the example of pleural effusion. Give you another example. When sometimes patients get their cancer spread to the spinal cord, we call it intrathecal chemotherapy. You know, I did those things blindfolded when I was an intern in Baghdad. I did it also when I was in Scotland, and I did one internship.
Hopefully not literally. You just mean that you did them often enough that you could have just...
Swear to God, I can do it with closed eyes. And inject chemo there. It's very easy.
Okay.
Now we are in our training. They're telling doctors, no, you don't do these things. Do you know that neurologists these days, they don't do spinal tap?
Why not?
They send it to the intervention radiologist.
Oh, because you can add on the radiology CPT code and make more money.
Remember my friend who is a professor at Duke University when he came here? No, he's a director of research somewhere or something. And he told us that actually at Duke University, you are prohibited. Like I'm an oncologist. If a patient comes to see me and say, I have belly pain, by rules of Duke University, for their staff physicians, they cannot address that pain. It has to be referred to gastroenterologists. And the gastroenterologist cannot give the pain medication to that patient. It has to be done by the pain management docs. A patient that goes to these big institutions becomes seven.
Wow.
Because they're seen by so many different specialists. But don't blame them, Charlie. Don't blame them. These are businessmen. They are businesses. Yeah, you can say, but they have to do what's nice for the patients. But they have to do what's nice. No, they are businesses and get over it. But we have the duty in the society, and the employers have to have the duty to watch out. What kind of waste is this? It's terrible. But it's hilarious, though. I mean, when you see it, there is no other industry where you actually not only make more money if you are incompetent, but you are incentivized to be incompetent. Just think about the pleural effusion. If I send admitted to the hospital, economically I'll do much better. But you know what? I don't want to do that. I'd rather see them feel better after 10 minutes. That's the biggest payment I can get in my life. So when the patient says I feel good.
Yes. Yeah. So you're 20. Well. How much is the golf course? How much did you save for the hospital idea?
The golf course and the golf course and the resort to be built probably cost about maybe a billion.
Okay, so
the golf course doesn't cost more than $78 million.
So your hospital idea hooked up with the on-site clinics.
Or build them on the golf course at the same time.
I'm thinking
you
it
know
would
what?
Be
not
nice.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
And have the docs, you know, like between when they take a break, go and hit a few
right.
balls
in
on the golf course.
In between surgeries, they can have a little golf time.
You know what? I think that would be good. I think that would be good. The other thing is, Shari, seriously, the $24 billion, besides the healthcare, although it's related, I really think that we need more options in the media. I think the media has become so polarized. I mean, when you look at Fox, they are polarized to the right. When you look at CNN. I mean,
so are you suggesting you're going to start a new media outlet?
Very good.
Is it going to be Twitter?
Absolutely. No, a TV station. That's absolutely. It will be hard to find people who are completely objective, that they make sense. So that when there's a piece of the news about anything, that they have to be objective. I'll give you an example. When you watch CNN, do not expect anything positive about the current administration. Zero. When you watch Fox News, which is my favorite channel, do not expect that they say anything, things that are negative about Trump and the and his administration. What does that tell you? That tells you that they are so polarized, yet the media are the conduit of our first right, First Amendment rights.
True, but it, but people have the ability to switch to one channel or the other.
But they're both biased. One more biased than the other. I mean, the MSNBC and so on, they're so disgusting that I, even NPR, I don't even listen to them anymore because I know what they're getting. Swear to God, I know what they're going to say before they say it. So I will build a TV station that I'll bring people who are really nice. They also, when you choose a jury, that they have totally, that the jurors for a jury trial, they have to be totally uninformed. That's the kind of people I will employ so that they just look what they find and they talk without being biased. That's a stretch, right?
Yeah, I think that maybe you ran out of your $24 billion before you got to the media.
I know I lose my money with that one.
I think you should stick with your day job.
I think I will lose money with that one. But seriously, I think there is a need for another media avenue. You saw even Facebook and others, they've been influenced by their own philosophy, but we need something.
Well, and I think that President Trump also feels that as well, and I think that's why he just completely sidesteps it with Twitter.
I think he invented a new avenue, which is the Twitter, which is upsetting everybody.
Yeah, because well, cutting out all the middlemen.
He's upsetting the media because now the news is what he says.
Yeah.
So he is controlling the news, and you know what? It's their fault. If they were objective, he will not be tweeting as much. Stormy Daniels, my gosh! How many times they mentioned this lady?
Yeah, we're done.
Huh?
We're done with Stormy.
We're done with Stormy. No more Stormy Daniels.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been great again. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was fun. When am I getting my $24 billion?
Next week.
Next week. Yeah, I think the government can afford to do that. I have somebody in the government listen to this. And they say, you know what, this poor gal is giving, $4 billion will be enough. I'll build a hospital system. It will be awesome for the employers in the area. You know how many jobs we will keep? In fact, we will attract more jobs to this area. Anyway, thank you very much.